Welcome to ACC Nation. Coming up, special guest Jeremy Wallman with a look at Louisville. Karen Babler talks about the NCAA Woman of the Year Award. And James Henderson shares some thoughts on NC State. We'll share our observations on week three of ACC football as well. But first, this. The number one teams in men's and women's college soccer. ACC will have the updated rankings this week. In college volleyball, Pitt leads the conference in rankings at number 11. Will they break into the top 10? The ACC has the top-ranked women's college field hockey team, and they're joined by six others in the top 25. ACC men's basketball conference and select women's schedules are out, and we'll share those with you at accnation.net, plus the Big Ten ACC Challenge schedule. All those polls, plus, the ACC Nation Power Poll ranks our top 15 teams in football. And we'll get a look at the AP Top 25 and USA Today Coaches Poll. So we've got lots of football and a limited window in which to fit it all. So let's jump right on it, Will. Our first game, Wake Forest over UNC, 24-18. Both these teams pretty much what we think they are.
Yeah, nice win for Wake. I think there's going to be a theme here talking about questionable officiating. We got the last play of the game where North Carolina tried to get in the range for a win, and the runner stepped out of bounds. I think it was Michael Carter with like a second left, but they said time ran out, which I understand the frustration, but I have a hard time understanding NCAA rules, but I don't think they would have had time for a play anyways. I understand UNC fans' frustration. Wake is now 3-0 in this season. Excellent start. Carolina suffers their first loss. I guess it's going to be cardiac Carolina this year. All three games have come down to a play or two. So they could easily be 3-0. They could easily be 0-3.
I don't think anybody should walk away with this with their heads down, because I thought both teams played fairly decently. And I really do believe both of these teams are still going to have very good seasons. 1 second. Guess we'll really never know whether it made a difference or not. Mm-hmm. And from the standpoint of those rules, Will, they change like every season. My God, would they just leave them alone for 1 year and quit tweaking everything? Let's move on to this next game, which was, man, a surprise. Kansas 48, Boston College 24.
It's a good thing we don't have a lot of time to talk about games, because I really don't want to get into this a whole lot. But, boy,
yeah.
Talk about a stinker of a performance. You know, Kansas loses to Coastal Carolina, scores 7 points, and turns around the next week, scores 48 against Boston College and puts up 567 yards of offense. What happened? I watched some of this game, too. It's not like, you know, Boston College is a good team. I thought it was a pretty good team, but that defense just completely stank up the joint.
Yeah. I would just say one thing here. I think that Boston College is a good team, but if they were going to have a down week, this wasn't a really good one to choose, but it happened. Put it behind you. Go forward. We'll see what happens. So next game up, Virginia Tech and Furman. Virginia Tech, I hate to say this, the Hokies are the team that we thought they were going to be and continue to show that they are. They're just struggling, and I don't know that they're ever going to come out of this funk.
Yeah, I was high on this team this year. I thought they had a shot to win the Coastal, and you never know. You know, they still can. But, you know, a good performance from Keyshawn King, but he did get hurt late in the game. Ryan Willis was sacked 4 times. And Furman led this game 14-3 at halftime. Another play where I call, you know, questionable officiating was Furman had kicked the field goal to make it 24-17. They had recovered the onside kick, but got called for blocking a player on an onside kick when the players weren't even near the goal. And I don't even think he actually was blocking him. It looked like the Virginia Tech player may have even initiated the contact. So, but then they had the re-kick, and obviously Virginia Tech covered, and you got a 7-point win over an FCS team. What has happened to this program?
I don't know. I want to admonish the fans who left early in that game. I noticed one particular person, and it's because of somebody in media who is a fan of the Hokies, who left early. Why? Are you a bandwagon fan? I mean, what? I don't get that. You know, if I go to a game, if I'm a supporter of a team, I'm sticking all the way through the entire game. I don't care how bad it is. I'm sticking all the way to the very end. I want to see what's going on. I want to see the whole thing. It's an experience. And I pay good money for that seat. So,
right.
You know, you left early, shame on you. And that applies to every daggone game. If you're number one, if you're not showing up, that's almost as bad. So, you know, I have a real pet peeve there. Let's go on to this next game. Penn State, number 13 in the nation, just pulling out a 17-10 win over Pitt. Now, this is going to be interesting to see what your opinion is and my opinion is on this game.
I think the most impressive thing out of this game is I feel like Pitt's defense is getting better. Their defensive line is getting a lot better. We see the gradual increase and just the way they're getting better defensively, especially up front. And I feel like this is going to be the typical Pitt team that always struggles out of the gate. But as the second half of the season goes on, they're going to be a much better team and a much more formidable opponent. We saw a much better game from Kenny Pickett in this game, threw for 372 yards. Taysier Mack at 125 yards. But, you know, another boneheaded decision, I guess, by Pat Narduzzi. You're down 17-10 in the fourth. Fourth and goal from the one. You go for the 19-yard field goal, and you miss. Now, explaining it at the end in the post-game interview, he says you need two scores to win. Yes, that is true.
Yeah.
However, if you go for it there on fourth and goal and you get it, it's 17-16. You make the PAT, you tie it at 17, you potentially can go to overtime where you can get that second score.
How about that? That's a derp moment. That I think you and I are seeing eye to eye on this game. I have to give Pitt a lot of credit. I thought they played a pretty decent game. It was a tough game, a rivalry game, so they were pumped up for this. They did well. I almost hesitate to say I'm going to put this loss on Narduzzi's shoulders because, you know, it's a team effort. But, yeah, he screwed up, and the fans noticed, and they're not happy.
Yeah, the fans have every right to be upset with Narduzzi after that game.
Yeah.
Not so much Pickett, or I thought the players played well. I don't think Narduzzi put him in a good enough situation to win.
Boom.
Joining us is Jeremy Wallman, editor of Cardinal Sports Zone, co-host of the Cardinal Sports Zone podcast, and the self-proclaimed best part of Ringside Podcast, where it's all about pro wrestling. Jeremy, great to have you on the show. We've been working on having you on for a while, and as always, life gets in the way. We're glad the waters are smoothing out, and happy to have you on to talk a little about Cardinals football and basketball.
Thanks for having me on. We had a lengthy conversation before we went live. I feel like you're family now.
Well, you
we,
are.
You know, we covered a lot of ground, but I'm always thankful when I have opportunity to come on and talk. So thank you so much for having me on.
But first, since you are chatting up listeners on Ringside Podcast, let's talk wrestling for a few seconds.
Yeah.
Who is?
Oh my God! I don't know if it'll be a few seconds, but I love you. You know me. You know me now. I'm ready to talk. So let's talk a little wrestling.
Let's talk. All right. Who is the very first professional wrestler that you remember?
The very first professional wrestler that I. This is going to be kind of a. It's a regional thing because for years we've had for the last 30 years, we've had Ohio Valley Wrestling here, which we are the official podcast of Ohio Valley Wrestling now, which we're very proud of that. But before that, we had a wrestling federation in town called USWA, and Jerry Lawler actually was, and Jeff Jarrett were the faces of that federation. Mm-hmm. So Jerry Lawler, which we had the pleasure, one of the first stars we got to interview for Ringside, he's the biggest part of my childhood as far as wrestling is concerned. Him and I grew up right around the Hulk Hogan boom. So those two guys are the first two. Now, I started watching Jerry Lawler a lot sooner than I did Hulk Hogan because we didn't have cable here in the backwoods of Louisville at that point. So turned it to Channel 3 every Saturday morning, watched Jerry Lawler dominate for about 8-9 years, and the rest is history.
Now, who's your favorite?
Oh, my favorite. Well, right now or of all time?
I'll just say all time.
Okay, my favorite wrestler of all time, I would have to go I would have to go with Shawn Michaels, but that's changed as of late because I actually gave Shawn Michaels a compliment on Twitter, and he blocked me. I guess he misunderstood the he misunderstood the comment I made. He had released a new movie, and I was like, man, you know, great job in movies after your career in wrestling. I can't wait to see more great stuff from you. I guess he thought I was making fun of him. He sweet chin music me right out of his Twitter feed, and the rest is history. But yeah, that would have to be my old school favorite of all time. Guys that are coming up now that I really enjoy, it'd be Kevin Owens, AJ Styles, and Kentucky's own Ricochet. He's a new, he's a hot, he's up and coming in the mainstream, but he's been wrestling independent stuff for quite some time.
So now I'm going to challenge your wrestling history acumen.
Okay.
All right. You ready for this? Mine, the very first one that I ever saw was, or that I remember, Johnny Weaver out of the Mid-Atlantic Wrestling. You're going to have to Google him, I'm sure. now, he was the first guy in wrestling that was credited with using the sleeper. That's how old school that is. My favorite is between Ric Flair and Roddy Piper because they're larger than life. Even though Ric Flair and Roddy Piper were both the heels for so many years, I don't know. It's sort of come around for me. I don't look at them as the heels any longer. They're
right.
They're good guys. You know. What can I say? So,
I actually do remember Johnny Weaver because in my early childhood, once the NWA came around, he actually commentated for them.
That's right.
So I remember him as a commentator, not as a performer.
There you go. Well, at least it touched a little. Now you know how much older I am than you. So there. Let's get into football, man.
Let's do it.
Let's get your thoughts on how Scott Satterfield has done so far and what you think the ceiling is for this year's team.
Well, let's start off by a blind horse could have came and took over the head coaching position at the University of Louisville and done a better job than that of our former. I don't want to say anything negative about him because here's the real deal about it. His father passed away last year during the season. He started going through a bunch of personal problems. We didn't have the proper staff that we needed, whether that was his fault or not. I'm not going to be like a lot of people and defecate all over his legacy. He did a lot of great things for the University of Louisville. If any Louisville fan were to name their top 10 Louisville football moments of all time, seven of those would include, off the top of my head, would include Bobby Petrino because you got the Fiesta Bowl. No, he was with Howard. You've got Charlie Strong Sugar Bowl, and then there was a game we played against Cincinnati that the week before. I think it was the week before. We lost to – oh, come on, Jeremy. You're better than this. The week that we lost before the week before Rutgers when we lost, that we were firmly in a position. I think we were ranked third in the country, and the number two team had lost. So we were going to be in the 1-2 – not that – I don't know that we would have made it that year. We probably should. We lost Michael Bush early that year to a broken leg. But nevertheless, that was a favorite. I told you I talk and get off topic. I'm sorry. But that anybody could have done better. Now, with that being said, Scott Satterfield has put an energy into this program, into this community, into the players, even guys that I know personally that last year weren't thrilled when we got him, but they weren't thrilled with what we had in place either, that were like, oh, my God, I can't. But we got somebody coming in here who's going to teach us how to be good boys and, you know, paraphrase stuff like that. It's not going to work. Those same guys are some of the most hyped people on the team right now that this guy's come in. We've started being a family. It's changed drastically. Last year, about halfway through the year, this is how bad it got. I don't know if this is common knowledge or not, but I will, as the young ones say these days, I'll spill the tea. see, I felt old just saying that. That's like when my dad said groovy or far out when I was a child. So I digress for a moment.
Right
but
on.
Bobby Petrino, actually, there were four kids in the city of Louisville that were four or five stars that committed elsewhere because about halfway through the season, Bobby Porter's recruiting team, and they stopped recruiting the city of Louisville. Wow. Two of them went to the University of Kentucky. One of them went to Western, and the other, and another one went to actually it was five, because one went to Purdue, one went to Stanford. And we missed out on – those kids grew up Louisville fans. We missed out on – that's how big the disconnect was. The players didn't even know where his office was. That's how bad it was. But to get back on track, all these players know where his office is. All the local kids love him. Before the season started, I said, just with the culture change around here, we'll get four wins. You got Eastern, you got Western, you got regular Kentucky, which unless we're absolutely disheveled, we should beat them. And then one of either Wake Forest or Boston College. After seeing the effort the first after the first game, the opening game lost to Notre Dame, that game was lost because of poor handling of the football by our quarterback. You take those turnovers away, that game's tied going you can point to three plays, and that game's tied going into overtime. Don't know if you'd have won it or not, but just off of the effort we've shown, I feel like the ceiling for this team is six wins. I feel like we can get six wins, we can get bowl eligible, and if that happens, Scott Satterfield, I don't care what anybody else does, that guy should be named Coach of the Year in the ACC.
There you go. Hey, the roster. I don't think there's any doubt that there's talent on this team. Contrary to the old, Dr. John song, the Cardinals were in the wrong place at the right time, leading to a change in coaches. Out of the players that were there last season, you've kind of alluded to this. Who has stepped up significantly this year?
Yeah, I don't think this will be a surprise to anybody that has been watching the game. Javian Hawkins has just absolutely took over. And we had a couple of running backs transfer before the season started. We just had one. He was our power running back a couple years ago. Day Williams transferred this week, put his name in the transfer portal. That shows you what this kid's done. He's outworked all these other guys. And I don't blame any of the guys for leaving. If you're not going to get a chance here, the coach has told Day, you're not going to play here. Hassan Hall, Javian Hawkins, 1-2 punch. We normally have a thunder and lightning punch, and Day was our thunder in that. When Michael Bush was here, he was our thunder. Bilal Powell is one that we've always associated with lightning. But these guys are lightning and lightning, and they're lightning fast. And we're going to score a lot of touchdowns. Historically, our offense has been pass-related, pass-based. You can go all the way back to Browning Nagel, Jeff Brohm, Chris Redman, Brian Brohm, Teddy Bridgewater, David Gone, Stephon LaForge, Hunter Cantwell, just to name a few. And I would name Lamar, but he was pretty balanced. He was a pretty balanced quarterback. But we'll throw him in there too, Mr. Heisman. We've been a passing – that has been our stick in Louisville. We throw the ball. We have great receivers that catch it. We have decent running game. Our running backs normally get about 800 yards a season, punch it in when we need to. That philosophy's changed this year. When I watched his bowl game last year, When he was announced as the new head coach, I went and watched a lot of his game film, and it looked like he had a gimmick offense. Not like a Georgia Tech or kind of like a Georgia Tech. You know, they're going to run it from one set all the time. Army's going to run from one or two sets all the time. This seemed like this was just going to be just one formation. We're going to run different plays out of it. And I wasn't sure. I don't know how I'm going to like it yet. I haven't really rolled with it for a whole season yet. But I've enjoyed other than the quarterback not being able to hold on to the ball in the first game. He's been pretty dependable as far as ball security the rest of the game. But for some reason, Bobby Petrino destroyed his confidence last year, and he still don't have it. Even though he was named starting quarterback, he is not playing. This kid was a five-star quarterback that we got. His final two was Louisville and Alabama. We got him over Alabama, and he is just, to this point, I don't want to say hasn't played up to that yet because that's a disservice to him. And his dad has actually been really cool. I went and watched him play a couple high school games because Louisville had some stuff in areas where they were playing. Dad's really cool person. I don't want to say anything disrespectful to Juwan, so I'll leave it at that. But he's not playing. I think this is safe to say He's not played like a five-star quarterback yet. And even in the Eastern Kentucky win, which was a very, very easy win, he missed on a lot of passes that I could have completed. And I've never been a quarterback a day in my life. So hopefully that's going to progress as the season goes by and he can tell that the coaching staff has confidence in him. But I think the sky's the limit for this team. And Coach Satterfield's been the major reason why.
Some encouraging news there on Juwan Pass. I look forward to seeing him come along. And I think sometimes it's just who you're surrounded with and who's helping to guide you, which seems to be what you're saying there. Just a quick question. We'll back up here just for a second. Javian Hawkins, do you think anyone actually saw him having the kind of season that he's had so far?
I don't even think he saw it. He put him, if I'm not wrong, and everybody's going to correct me or back me up, I believe he had put his name in the transfer portal at one point. So I don't think he thought he was going to play over Day. I don't think he was going to thought he was going to play over Trey Smith, which he transferred as well, or Hassan. So I'm not even sure he had that confidence in himself that he was going to be a contributor here at Louisville. If anybody tells you that at the beginning of the year that they thought he was going to be a major factor this year and they weren't related to him, I don't know if you could trust them. I saw it in him in high school. I just think that last year, the whole last year, that I wish it could be scrubbed out of my memory. I wish all those experiences could be scrubbed out of the player's memory, because I think he could, you know, he could have done this. But no, I don't know of anybody who could have sat there with a straight face and be like, oh, you remember at the beginning of the year, I told you Javian Hawkins was going to be an issue. No, you didn't. We all thought he had the potential to, but there's a big difference between potential and putting it out there on the field. As a former player, I know that, like I said, we've seen that with Juwan. He is an NFL. And this is going to be a huge statement to say, he is an NFL caliber prospect. I see just as much from him now as I saw in certain aspects of Teddy Bridgewater's game his freshman year. I'm going to count this as his freshman year because for whatever reason, we kept flip-flopping last year at quarterback, and I expect us to do the same this year, and I think that's going to be a staple of coach's offense. I think we're going to see a lot of dual quarterback situations, but Malik Cunningham, he was our leading rusher last year. He was our quarterback. He only rushed for about 500 yards. That shows the problems we had last year. But I digress. Get back on topic. I told you I get off topic a lot. I love to talk. Just tell me to shut up. I'll obey. But no, I don't know anybody that thought Javian Hawkins was going to be a problem this year. And I'm very glad he has been so far.
You know, Jeremy, I don't think you're going out too far on a limb there talking about Pass and being an NFL prospect at all. I see the same thing, and I would agree with you, and I would certainly argue that point until I was about blue in the face. So, Jeremy, since we're talking about quarterbacks, I see on the recruiting list two top quarterbacks, Chubba sure. Purdy, T. Webb, committing to Louisville. And that's pretty big news. Tell us how you see what looks like a quarterback competition playing out, and is that a good thing?
Well, I'll tell you this as well. Louisville also has a history of recruiting two quarterbacks, and then once they get here, converting one of them to a different position. The last one I can remember is, I believe, Dominique Brown was a four-star quarterback in high school. He got here, we converted him to running back, and there's some – it's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't. There's one a couple years ago that we. I'm gonna kick myself because as soon as we stop talking about it, I'm gonna remember it. But as far as how I see this playing out, I really can't tell you yet because this is the first year of Scott Satterfield in Louisville. I don't know a whole lot about him. I feel like if he's doing this with Malik and Juwan now, that could be a precursor of what we're gonna see. Chubb is absolutely gonna be. In my opinion, he's going to be the guy that goes out there and throws the ball. T. Webb might be a Malik Cunningham type guy where he comes in special circumstances, certain occasions, certain formations, and gets plays done. I just, if I'm being as honest as possible, I just don't know yet. I haven't had enough experience with Coach Sapp yet to know what he's going to do, to know his tendencies. But I imagine Chuba Purdy was responsible for 10 touchdowns a couple weeks ago in his high school game. That I don't care who you are, that's amazing. And the competition out there in Arizona is not like competition in a lot of the lower football states. And Kentucky's a pretty – I wouldn't put them as a five-star legacy high school football state. I put them somewhere around 3.5, 4. But if he could put 10 – in Arizona, I would probably put like at an even 3. But still, 10 touchdowns. I watched the game film. It looked like it was effortless to him. He had a really good offensive line there. And our O-line is improving now here. So the only thing I could say is that I feel like they're both going to be used in some capacity. Maybe one of them transfer or doesn't end up here because, I mean, Juwan still got another year. Maybe they don't want to wait a year, but I've always seen here in Louisville that the quarterbacks that come in sit out a year. They watch the current guy. They fared a lot better than the guys that have just come in and started from day one and played. So that's the only thing I can really even say about that situation. I just don't know.
Sitting out a year and sitting behind somebody for a year, or at least a good portion of that year, is always a good idea. It gets those players up to the college level speed. Same thing kind of happens to you when you go from college into the NFL. Sometimes you need a little bit of time to get used to that speed because it is really fast. It makes a big difference. I just ask you this. It's funny, and we were talking about quarterbacks and converting to maybe wide receiver. We've seen some quarterbacks converted to linebacker in the ACC, which is a little unusual, but doing well. A lot of talk in the NFL about one Lamar Jackson being converted to a wide receiver because he just didn't have what it takes to be in the pocket and to make passes and to be, and here we are this season, and I think that's all been wiped out. You have some thoughts on that, I'm sure.
Well, I do. And just to go back for a second, Juwan got to sit behind Lamar Jackson for a year and watch what he did. So when Juwan came here, we all thought he was going to be a passing quarterback. Never seen any flashes of in the games that I went to watch, of a running game in him. And so far in his Louisville career, I have seen flashes of that. But I don't honestly, everybody can say, oh, the hater, Lamar, I don't know that they were haters, because when Lamar was here, as blessed as he was and as great as he was, our first Heisman winner ever, wasn't that great of a passer. Mm-hmm. I can remember just – you say that, the first thing that hits my mind is when we beat Florida State 100 million to 12 or whatever it was. They were ranked third. We were ranked 10th. It was here at home. I want to say it was 2016 or 17. And we had a chance to start off the game with a touchdown. And I think I don't know if we ended up scoring or not on that drive, but Jalen Smith was wide open going down the sideline and Lamar overthrew him. And then a couple plays later, he underthrew him. So I don't think that would be unfair for anybody to sit there and say, oh, he can't pass, he can't do this. Because I'm pretty sure if you look at his offensive stats, he had similar rushing yards to his passing yards. And he had a lot of rushing yards. So to fast forward a little bit, anytime somebody's hungry and they want to work hard, and they do work hard, and Lamar worked hard this offseason. He didn't like the people saying that about him last year, thinking he was a gimmick quarterback and he just lucked his way into a 7-1 or 8, whatever his record was into the season last year. He took that personally, and he went out this summer and perfected his craft. And I don't think anybody in the country now could say, oh, he can't hit a 20-yard route. Because, I mean, that was kind of true sometimes. He was an inconsistent passer in college, but he's not now.
Let's look ahead to basketball. Exciting season ahead for Chris Mack's preseason. Number 5, Louisville Cardinals. This is a woulda, shoulda, coulda kind of question. Man. If it were a cologne, it might be called Odib Beating a Dead Horse. Nonetheless, without reserve, I ask, what would the team be like if David Johnson hadn't suffered a shoulder injury?
Well, first off, let me say, is there any team, and there may be, and you can point it out to me, is there any university in the country that has been blessed with this? I mean, we got Scott Satterfield and Chris Mack within a 2-year time frame. And as far as what I've seen from the guys, they're not your typical coaches, the screaming, yelling, cussing, motivating. And trust me, I've been coached by both kinds of people growing up, and it was the harsher guys that motivated me more. Like, I'm going to show him. He ain't going to cuss me out. I'm going to go score a touchdown and show him. But, man, what great guys. These guys are great people. They're not just good coaches. They're great people. To answer your question, God, what a freshman class we had coming. How do you pretty much get nuked off the face of this earth with all the scandals that Patino, and I'm still a huge Patino fan. We can get into that a different time. I'll be glad to come back on. Anytime you want to discuss that stuff and the Jurich stuff, I love both of those guys, so I'm not going to say anything too harsh about them. But how do you get nuked off the face of the earth and then have as good of recruiting classes as we've had these last 2 years? And this was phenomenal. If David Johnson hadn't been injured, maybe we were preseason 1 or 2. And I think, you know, sometimes you see teams and you say, oh, well, they're overhyped. They don't deserve this ranking, or they don't deserve that. This team is deep. It is talented. And the pieces we're bringing back from last year, and the pieces we're plugging in this year are the ones when we watched the season last year, we're like, man, if we had a finisher around the rim, man, if we had another scorer, man, if we had a guy that could hit mid-range jumpers, boom, 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 boom. We got all those things we asked for last year. It was like we were good and Santa gave us what we wanted. But I'm not ready to sit here and say, oh, Louisville Cardinals, national champions. But I think this is going to be one of the better teams that you've seen in Louisville history, just behind that 2013 team that, depending on who you talk to, did or did not win the national championship, even though I was there. Thought I've got all the posters, towels, all the stuff to say it, but some people say it didn't happen. And I don't really like those people, so it is what it is. But, yeah, to answer your initial question, gosh, what a team it would be. David Johnson, he is a distributor. He is a defensive hawk, and we missed a little bit of that last year. So the sky's the limit for this team.
So you've got you mentioned the roster, Nora, Sutton, Enoch, Williams, transfers Kimball, Williamson, not hurting for talent there. Anybody that's coming off the bench that we're missing?
I mean, you didn't mention Ryan McMahon. He's our spark plug. He's the guy that when we're up 5 or 6, and our guys are getting tired, he comes in and just hits about 4 or 5 threes in a row and puts the game, okay, I may be exaggerating a little bit out of reach. But like I said earlier, we needed somebody, and Enoch is a horse. He should have been able to do this, but some guys do, depending on their style, depend on a guy to be able to play around them better. Just like Montrez made Gorgie better around the basket. I'm 1,000% convinced that Aiden Agahan is going to make Steve Enoch a better player, because they're going to have to double team Agahan. He is a monster. I'm not sure him or Sam Williamson will be here next year. I truly believe they're both one and done. We needed another scorer last year, a more consistent scorer. Sam Williamson's going to be that guy. He can absolutely fill it up. And then with the other guys coming in, Johnson, like I said, he's a distributor. Nickelberry and Withers are both decent. Nickelberry is the one that I'm the most excited about for certain aspects, because he can play defense and score. So he's not just, you know, okay, this is your position. Nickelberry can play 1, 2, 3, maybe 4. I don't know that he'll ever be put in that position. But it's like Withers and Johnson are defensive hawks. So I'm so excited. This is probably – now you got me wishing it's the end of the start of the basketball season now. this is probably the most excited I've ever been for a Louisville basketball team.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot here. One last question. Do you think is a team that can win a national championship this season?
Absolutely. I think there's probably about five teams that can win it. And barring, here's the thing with Louisville basketball fans, and I'll tell you this. We get a good, about three-fourths of the way of the season, we're feeling really good, and then we get a key injury happening. Everything just, our last month of the season under Rick Pitino was always four or five losses that last month because we lost somebody, and then we get them back, and then the chemistry just wasn't there. So barring, knock on wood again, or whatever's around me, barring injury, this team absolutely can win the national championship. And that's something I've never been able to say before the beginning of a season. Not even in 2013. As good as Peyton and Montrez and Gorgie and Luke and all of them were, I felt like we were a top 15, top 10 team. But I was just waiting that last month of the year for some. And I believe Gorgie got hurt at the beginning of the season. I believe he broke his hand. He did. In the Bahamas. The Battle for the Atlantis, actually, it was. I don't know if that's in the Bahamas or not. But he broke his head at the beginning of the season. So we were all like, well, hopefully, since we lost somebody to injury at the beginning of the season, we won't at the end. But we were all waiting to see who was going to get hurt at the end of the season. And when nobody got hurt, how could I forget Russ Smith? One of my buddies that's here is like, Russ Smith? How could I forget Russ Ridiculous? He's the reason why we made it. He didn't perform well in the championship game, but Tim Henderson in the Wichita State game were the reason why we're there. But nevertheless, this is the most excited I've ever been before the season starts. I'm ready to go ahead and book my hotel room. And coincidentally, I believe the Final Four is in Atlanta this year. That's where we cut the nets down the last time it was in Atlanta. So I already know a hotel down there. I already know all my favorite places to eat. You have made me want to book my hotel room as soon as we get off the phone. I'm going to do it. I'll send you the receipt to prove it.
I'm looking forward to it. Man, that's some karma right there. Hey, from pro wrestling to football to basketball, pleasure to have you on the show, Jeremy.
Hey, no problem. I just want to tell everybody, get to the iTunes store, download Ringside Podcast. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. All anywhere you can get a podcast, you can get that one. The Cardinal Sports Zone podcast is available on hallaboutsports.com, and Ringside Podcast is as well, and on all the podcasts too. So come check us out. If you don't like anybody that's on the shows with me, make fun of them. I do. It's one of the fun things, especially the wrestling podcast. I make fun of my co-host Daniel Spencer and good old JK all the time. So it's a great time. Listen to all the episodes of the Ringside Podcast, but episode 100 was last week. We got to interview Al Snow, owner of Ohio Valley Wrestling, had a great 2-hour conversation with him. And then this week we recorded a episode at Zaxby's in Shepherdsville. It was a benefit that we did and raised money for the Bullitt County Animal Shelter. So it was a great time. Hopefully we got some money raised so they can get some transport vans for that facility. And with the Cardinal Sports Zone podcast, we got to interview Pittsburgh Steeler Keith Kelsey and the only 5-time All-American in Louisville history tight end Ivan Green. And I would be absolutely lost after all the stuff I had going on personally with me the last few years if it wasn't for the great people at CardinalSportsZone.com. Shout out to our senior correspondent, Jeff Nunn, Katie, Paige, JK, Mitch, Jacob, Sean, TJ, Sam, Ben, Coach Hoba, Daniel Spencer from the Ringside Podcast. He does a lot of audio and video interview stuff for us. And then Higgy. I can't forget Higgy. It's his birthday today. So, man, shout out to all the great people at Cardinal Sports Zone that helped me keep this running through my highs and my low times. But with them, it's always a good time.
Man, our thanks to Jeremy Wauman, editor of Cardinal Sports Zone, co-host of the Cardinal Sports Zone podcast, also part of Ringside Podcast. We appreciate you joining us, Jeremy.
Thank you so much for having me on today. I really do appreciate it.
West Virginia 44, NC State 27. Boy, oh boy. Everybody woke up to what the Mountaineers' pride is all about, because the Mountaineers came to play, and at least on one end of the ball, NC State did not.
So let's just put this game in perspective here on the defensive side. In the first two games of the season, North Carolina State's defense had given up 375 yards total. Against West Virginia, they gave up 445.
Crazy.
Yeah. And yeah, that's where it all lies. You know, McKay wasn't great, threw under 50% completions. Again, this is a team that needs to be relying on its running game. Bam Knight and Ricky Person combined for 23 carries, 124 yards. Those two should be the bread and butter of NC State's offense. I know they were trailing, but I would not be having McKay be thrown 48 times in a game.
Yeah, I think that's a mistake. Move on from that, but I will just say one last thing. NC State, again, is a good team. Everybody's got to have an anomaly loss. I don't know if this one fits in it or not, but we certainly expected NC State to go in there and have a much better game. They didn't. Learn from it. Move ahead. Next game. All right. Citadel over Georgia Tech, 27-24. I automatically give Jeff Collins and his team a pass based upon everything that we know about that team. But nonetheless, got to lick your wounds over this loss.
I saw plenty of Georgia Tech fans on Twitter after this one really questioning the way this played out, putting a lot of this loss onto him. They didn't feel like they put the team in the position to win. But this has been a really depressing, you know, past few minutes if you're a fan of the ACC, talking about all these losses to teams. And, you know, you have Georgia Tech losing to an FCS team. Collins, you know, at the end of the game, you know, they had the play down at the last few seconds where I can't remember who it was, but the quarterback, it was either Lucas Johnson or Tobias Oliver, ran in for the winning touchdown, but nobody ever heard the whistle. Jeff Collins had called timeout before the play, and they ended up going for the field goal instead and tying it, sending it to overtime. I would consider this an inexcusable loss. I don't care where your program is at. You cannot lose to the Citadel. This is a bad, bad loss.
We're joined by the Assistant Athletic Director of Sport Operations at the University of Washington, Karen Babler, who is also the chair of the NCAA Woman of the Year Selection Committee. Thank you for joining us, Karen.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
This is a great program. From the standpoint of participation, it has grown immensely. So, Karen, tell us how and when the NCAA Woman of the Year Award began.
I don't know all of the nuances of the award, but it was created in 1991, and the idea was to bring attention to women's athletics in the NCAA and the achievements of women competing. There weren't really any awards at the time that were specifically for women, so this was a way to recognize some of the top women competing in NCAA sports.
Well, this is truly about student athletes and their participation in the community. Now, that can be local or even worldwide in several instances. Tell us a little more about what the guidelines are, the things that you're looking for on the selection committee out of student athletes to qualify for this award.
So there are three categories that are weighted equally, and that is their athletic achievement, their academic achievement, and then a combination of leadership and community service. So those are all weighted at 30% of a total score that they get. And then there's another 10% that is a personal statement. So that statement is just maybe to give us a little bit more about their story, about what they, you know, what their passions are, and just give us a better idea of who they are and what they're all about. And the process is, and it's not just the score. There's a committee that's in place that looks at the whole package that they put together, and they're all amazing women, so it's a very difficult process. But they put that together, and there are in 2018, for example, there was 581 nominees. So There's a number that's associated with their application, but then there's also a lot of discussion that happens in this selection process.
Well, tell us a little more about who's qualified for the award. It's not freshmen, sophomores, juniors. And how does it play out among the three NCAA divisions?
It has to be a female student athlete who is graduating, is all divisions. In fact, all institutions, all NCAA institutions are encouraged to nominate at least one individual from their institution. And if they can nominate a second individual, if that individual is a woman who's an international student or a woman of color. And then the conference offices take the top candidate from all of the institutions and move that forward to the Woman of the Year selection committee.
Well, there are several steps which lead to the final announcement. Take us along that path to the final night in Indianapolis.
Yeah. And so we start with all of the institutions across the NCAA, Division I, Division II, Division III, and each institution may nominate up to two graduating student athletes. And then that goes to their conference offices. And then the conference office takes a look at those nominees from each of their institutions and then moves forward up to two from their conference. Then it goes to the Women of the Year Selection Committee. When it gets to the Women of the Year Selection Committee, there's about 150 candidates this past year. And the members of the selection committee read through all 150 applications. They then get on a conference call and whittle that down to the top 30. And then from that top 30, and that top 30 is 10 in each division. And then from that top 30, they then select the top 9, 3 from each division. As you can imagine, it gets very, very tough. These are all amazing women to get to that top 30, that top 9. They're just exceptional people. And then from there, the Committee on Women's Athletics meets and from that top 9 selects the Woman of the Year.
Now there are two candidates from the ACC who are up for the NCAA Woman of the Year Award. And can you tell us a little more about them?
Yeah, there is Virginia Elena Carta, who is a golfer from Duke University. And then Jillian Shriver, who competes in cross country, indoor and outdoor track from Pitt. And both of those young women have made it to the top 30 and will be invited to the celebratory banquet that honors the top 30 and the finalists.
Last question for you. Being on the committee, what has this experience meant to you?
Well, I have to say it's been a really humbling experience. These women are just amazing. It makes me wonder what the heck I was doing when I was in college. Just their achievement and their commitment to their, you know, their fellow student athletes and their communities. I mean, they're just amazing people. It's been great to meet them. There's a banquet that happens in October to honor the winner and the top 9 finalists, and it's just really great. It makes me, you know, feel good about the future with amazing people like these women.
Special guest Karen Babler, the chair of the NCAA Selection Committee for the Woman of the Year Award. Thank you so much, Karen, for joining us, giving us a look inside the program.
Thank you very much.
All right, let's get into the more positive side of the schedule. We'll start with this Miami over Bethune-Cookman. Now, you know, this is one of those games, the score really tells me that Manny Diaz wants to pump up his players and give as many people as possible some experience on the field. If I were on the other side of this, I probably wouldn't be re-upping Miami on my schedule. Miami 63, Bethune-Cookman, goose egg.
Yeah, one of these games I call stat padder games. That's literally all you're doing in these games. You don't learn a whole lot. You're basically just trying to blow out the other team, and this is exactly what happened here. It did take a little while because it was only 7-0 after the first quarter, but ultimately the Hurricanes just out-talented them and ended up out-gaining Bethune-Cookman 590-137. Jaron Williams looked good in this game, threw for 3 touchdowns, 254 yards. One of the best part of this game at the end was seeing a walk-on, a running back, get a touchdown. And those are always awesome stories when you see walk-ons getting an opportunity to play in a football game that actually counts. And I think it was like Jimmy Murphy, I think his name was, a running back, scored on a short touchdown run. But, you know, they're going to remember this for the rest of their lives. So that's what's so cool about it.
That's a senior send-off for him, too.
Yeah, exactly.
The next game, not a bad performance for the guys over in Louisville. 38-21. Now, why was this game played in Tennessee?
I should have looked that up, but I didn't. I remember I was watching highlights on the ACC Network post game thing, and I noticed the Tennessee Titans logos in the end zone. I'm like, why are they playing this game in Nashville? But it doesn't matter where they played. Louisville was a much better team here. Mm-hmm. Scored 24 points in the second quarter, which is really the difference in this game. Juwan Pass was out in this game with an injury. Malik Cunningham came in, threw for 119 yards, but they didn't need to throw a lot. They ran 51 times in this game for 210 yards. I talked about Javion Hopkins the first 2 weeks. He did it again for 93 yards on 19 carries, got a nice rushing touchdown. Hassan Hall went for 55, averaging about 4.5 yards per carry. Defense did its part, held Western Kentucky to 1.8 yards per carry. Impressive win for Louisville. You're seeing a team that is competently coached and are looking good.
Let's take a look at this next game. Duke over MTSU, Middle Tennessee, 41-18. Duke, again, another one of these teams that we look past them at our own peril.
Yeah, and the reason is we just don't know what they are yet. They opened the season with Alabama, and you're not going to get a whole lot done there. Did pretty well defensively in that game. They've done well this year on defense. I think this is one of their worst defensive performances of the season. They still only allowed 339 yards to Middle Tennessee, but Quentin Harris just quietly just playing very well. 24-27, 237 yards, 4 touchdowns, ran for another 107, over 340 total yards, playing excellently. And, this is exactly what Duke needs because, the schedule is going to start getting tougher here. They've got, they're starting to get into the conference play with Virginia Tech in a couple of weeks. They'll have the bye week to prepare for that. So I'm going to be interested to see just where Duke is here with this stretch of Virginia Tech and Pitt and Georgia Tech and at UVA. We're going to know just how legit Quentin Harris is.
Well, talking about legit, now we know where Syracuse stands. Clemson 41, Syracuse 6.
If you've listened to this podcast, I've cautioned you about Syracuse and last year, they benefited from turnovers. They were not very good in terms of just yards against. Last year, they were in total defense. They were 10th in the league, but they benefited from turnovers that, like I've always said, that you can't repeat that on a yearly basis. And they're now last in the league in terms of total yards given up. And this is, some of that had to do with that Maryland game last week, when they gave up a bajillion yards. This week they only allowed 612 to Clemson. And this is a team that Clemson, I didn't even think Clemson played its best game. That's the funny thing.
Nope.
Trevor Lawrence threw for 2 picks. Travis Etienne only had averaged 5 yards carry, which isn't bad, but I feel like he wasn't quite as good as the stats indicated. Again, Tommy DeVito struggled, threw an interception, only 172 yards. Syracuse is, they're reeling a little bit after a couple losses. They should rebound with the next 2 games. They have Western Michigan and Holy Cross, and then they really get into league play, and then we'll see where Syracuse is.
Yeah, let's not write off Syracuse just yet. Clemson is, as we've often said, they're in a league of their own, and they've just demonstrated it. And even though the offensive, you pointed out, didn't perform up to snuff as we would expect them to. It certainly wasn't anything to sniff at. Clemson's offense and defense is just an overwhelming force of life. You know,
the funny thing is I don't think Clemson's played a complete game on offense yet, and they're still mowing people down.
Yep. It's more to come. And I'm going to finish up with this one because I knew that this is your pride and joy. This was a game that I think a lot of people were really looking forward to and may not have thought it was going to be this close. I will brag on myself a little bit. You were talking about, you pointed out some things about Syracuse. Let me say that I pointed out some things about Florida State. Don't look past them. That team is starting to click. It's starting to come together. And I will just say that Virginia did not fall down on their faces against Florida State. Florida State is actually starting to come into their own and gave them a decent game. Virginia is the better team. And I think overall on all facets of that game proved that point. But man, that finish, boy, oh boy.
Yeah, I don't know how many times ACC Network replayed that Florida State-Virginia game from 1995, but it felt like it was on at least 3 to 4 times during the week. I watched one of them, and it just was weird how it came down to a final play near where Virginia was up against the goal line and had to make a stop on a running back in order to preserve a win. Turned out to be a good game. I think we all needed to take a step back and realize Florida State is not that as bad as they seem. But, you know, realize these first two games, they've been playing games where temperatures have been pretty sweltering. This was a normal weather game where you're not getting dehydrated nearly as easily. You know, Cam Akers had 78 yards rushing, not a bad game. I thought he was going to be pretty tough to stop. You know, Blackman did pretty well, but he was sacked 3 times. Virginia's defense got to him in the fourth quarter. Bryce Perkins actually threw 40 passes in this game. Went 30 of 40, 295 and a touchdown. I questioned the play calling or the game plan on Twitter because I don't think we should be running Bryce Perkins out there to throw 40 passes in a game. I'm wondering how much of this has to do with his knee injury. He's been wearing a brace on it, and he's not 100%. I think anybody who's watched the games knows that. Props to Wayne Talapapa, 3 touchdown runs, all pretty close in. Good game for him. What everyone's talking about are 2 things. One, that 2-point conversion that Bryce Perkins had to make it 31-24, where he ran about 50 yards, did some toe tapping, nice dance moves, and then kind of stepped into the end zone. Props to Ryan Nelson for blocking 3 people to help spring him. And then the way the game ended where the clock operator didn't stop the clock right away. I think it stopped with about 4 seconds when it should have been about 7. And either way, the way they were Florida State was lining up is they were going to go for the game on that last play anyway, so I don't think they were going to clock it. Either way, huge win for Virginia given everything. You know, this was a huge weekend. Friday night they raised the championship banner, had some of the players from the championship team back in town. Now that you know they're in the NBA, they got some of the other former players in. And just, you know, an emotional weekend capped off by an emotional football game where I think I might have lost, took 10 years off my life. And you know, considering with that and then the way the NCAA tournament went, I'm surprised I'm even still alive, to be honest with you.
There are lots of good things going on in Raleigh, and we're joined by the owner of Inside Pack Sports, James Henderson, fresh, well, not quite fresh, off the links to talk about the Wolfpack. And before we get started, I need to get a first name of a person that you absolutely trust, James. Anybody.
First name of anybody I trust?
Yes, anybody.
Well, I'm going to have to say Carolyn, that's my wife, so okay. I better trust her.
Okay. Now... here's the second question. What did you shoot today on the nine?
What did I shoot on the nine? 40.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, are you an over or under par kind of guy?
Oh, I'm over par. Okay. Yeah, I mean, 40 is good for me. I'll take it on nine.
So if I were to call your wife and ask her about your golf game, what do you think she'd say?
She'll probably say, I didn't know he played golf this morning, but thank you for telling me.
So I won't call her there. How about that? Oh, man. Well, if I were to do the same, the answer would be he's got a nice slice off the tee and the clubs are collecting dust in the garage. So you're far ahead of me there.
Right.
Outside of the circle there in Raleigh, there have been infinite questions regarding NC State football. Can they be half as good as last year's, one of the biggest ones? Who are these guys that are stepping up? That kind of thing. One of my cohorts in crime, Will, laid down a few questions for me to ask you. One of them is, this defense, is it legit?
Well, I think we'll start to find out again at West Virginia, but for me, the signs are encouraging. I think, you know, I've been covering NC State now all the way back to 2002, so going on 18 years, and you, I'm sure you've covered a lot of football as well, and you generally get to a point where it's hard to be fooled. You know, I mean, you can see a team and see good gaudy stats, but you'll have a general feel for if it's, you know, really competition based or if you've got something there. And I think with this defense, I think NC State has something, because generally, even when you play, you know, East Carolina or Western Carolina, I mean, you're going to give up something, you know, and I think against Western, I mean, Western Carolina did not even cross the 50-yard line. East Carolina, they had a field goal when NC State had their main players in. I mean, they scored a field goal on the last possession of the game. But, I mean, through two games, you haven't given up a touchdown yet. I can't remember that happening at NC State since I've been covering them. And you know, most teams start the year with similar level competition. Now, I'm not saying they're going to play each week and not give up a touchdown. But I just think when you look at the way this defense is built, there's a lot of returning players. There's a lot of athleticism, length, size, and just a ton of depth. And I think that's the big thing, is they're shuttling in, you know, two, three different units on all three levels. And I think that's impressive.
Now, from year to year, you know, it's really hard to step into big shoes. So what are the early returns on Matthew McKay?
He's been solid. I think that'd be the best way to describe him. I know just on our forums at Inside Pack Sports, I mean, there's people that have questions about his deep ball. He hasn't hit a deep ball yet and things like that. But I think at the end of the day, I mean, you're talking about a guy who has now two career starts. So I don't think you can find a quarterback in the country where through two starts, you're not going to have a question about him. But I do think the early returns have been positive, you know, through two games, zero turnovers. I think that's the first thing you really look at. Is he turning, is he taking care of the football? He's doing that. He's got four touchdowns. He's completed 67% of his passes. So he's been accurate. I think he's shown really good pocket awareness. I think he's shown really good feel for the offense. You know, if you watch him back on film, I mean, I think you get a sense that he does a great job of going through his progressions and finding reads. It's not a lot of scramble type situations where he's just making plays. And I think early on as a player, that's encouraging. If you can sense from them, they have the confidence to sit in the pocket and go through progressions and find a receiver or tight end to complete the ball too. So, you know, again, I think he's been solid. Last year as a backup, he was able to play at Louisville. I think he played that full fourth quarter. He had a couple drives at Clemson. But outside of that, he's not had to go into an environment like Morgantown. So I think we're going to get a really good sense for him starting this week.
You may have answered my question that is a follow-up already just by what you've said there. But let's dig a little deeper, if we can, into the offense. I know that they've had some early game struggles. That may be just getting used to the rhythm of things and learning how everybody plays together. That starts to click usually third, fourth, fifth week. Is there a particular aspect that you see in the offense that has been the source of those early game struggles?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. It's been third down offense, third down conversions on offense. I think NC State has not been as effective on third down as I'm sure Dave Dorn would have liked. Right now, you know, through two games, they've completed – they're right at 38% on third down, which when you factor in who they're playing, that's not good at all. And I think that's something where if you're NC State, you know, you need to really – improve that as you play against better competition. You take, for instance, the Western Carolina game. I mean, that was a 3-0 game at the end of the first quarter, and and State was leading 3-0, but a big reason was because three of those drives went six plays or less, you know, with 2-3 and outs, because they couldn't convert a third and medium or third and short. And I think that's probably been the bigger concern is I think it's a positive you're not facing third and tens frequently. You know, you're putting yourselves in manageable third down situations. Now it comes down to just converting those. And I think one of the things they did in those two games was they came out of halftime much better. So they went in, I think, looked at some things, made some adjustments. I think in the second half of both games, they were over 60% on third down, which is probably what they wanted to be for the game against those two teams. But yeah, I think that's been the source of their slow starts, is the fact that they've not been able to convert third downs, which has ended drives early in games, and I think that's something they can't afford to have keep happening.
Let's talk about the loss of C.J. Riley. How has that impacted this team, or has it?
Well, I personally think it's too early to tell. I think it's going to impact NC State. You know, I was one of the guys who I felt like C.J. was going to have a big year for NC State. I thought his skill set really gave them something they lacked last year at times. It's just his raw vertical speed. I mean, he's arguably the fastest player on the team at 6'4". I mean, he ran, I think, a 4.33 over the summer. And, I mean, he was the guy that was going to be their deep vertical threat. And that helps you in multiple areas. Obviously, the big one is the big chunk play and completing those long, you know, his long touchdown, scoring touchdown plays. And we saw, and I already mentioned, I think through two games, McKay is 0-for-5 on passes of 20-plus yards or more. And he completed a 50-plus yarder in the spring game to C.J. Riley. And I think that's where you miss Riley, is his ability to create separation deep. But also just with him being a guy with that type of speed, I mean, he's constantly taking the top off defenses, which should help your running game, because now you can't play two safeties and, you know, you can't play a safety down frequently. You have to have two safeties up at times with him just because of how fast he is. So I think I don't see a guy who can replace his raw speed, and I think that's going to be a concern for NC State. But I do think they have some young receivers like Devin Carter or Keon Massain who could go out there and produce for him. But I think Riley's impact was going to be more so on just the vertical passing game and also, you know, stretching out that box so you can really help get that running game going. And I don't know if they have a speed guy like that who can replace him this year.
So Dave Dorn, it looks like he's got the pack in a really good place. And for, you know, contract-wise, it looks like it's going to be continuing for a while. That's not a bad thing. For all intents and purposes, this looks like a pretty solid bowl team this season. Tell us, James, what do you see for this team? Is it an AP top 25 team? What's the ceiling?
Well, you know, it's funny because I came into the year thinking with all their losses, I mean, this is a team over the last 2 years, I think they've had 11 players drafted in the NFL. I believe they've had 12 all-ACC players over the last 3 years, which, again, those are numbers you don't really approach at NC State, or you haven't historically. You know, they've won 11 ACC games in the last 2 years, second only to Clemson. But with that comes so much turnover. I mean, I think right now I want to say they've got 10 seniors on the roster, which I believe their SID department said that was the fourth fewest in the country. So I came into the year saying, okay, if they can get to 7 wins or maybe even 8 wins, I mean, that'd be a great year with this team. But after seeing where the defense is at and seeing that McKay seems like he's going to be, you know, good or good enough, and when you look at kind of how their schedule started to play out, I mean, Florida State, they look vulnerable. You know, Syracuse looks vulnerable. I think Louisville and Georgia Tech are two teams in transition. You know, North Carolina, first year head coach, NC State's won 3 straight against them. I think that's a game at home NC State's going to feel confident about. So when you really step back and kind of look at where the schedule is now, I mean, I do think this is a team that can once again compete for, you know, second in the Atlantic. I mean, that's the problem I think NC State faces versus, you know, teams that in the state they're frequently compared to, when you look at Duke and North Carolina, I mean, they're in the Atlantic side, so you got to deal with Clemson, right? And so winning division titles and all those things, I mean, it's just going to be very difficult for a team like NC State or Florida State or Syracuse to do that right now. But what you can do is take care of everything else, and that's beat everybody else if you can. And you could put it in a situation where, you know, maybe you don't win the Atlantic if, like, a Duke or North Carolina can win the Coastal. But if you can still beat those teams and have more wins and have a better overall season, then you can do that. And I think this team, if they stay healthy and if they could keep progressing offensively, I think they have the potential to finish, you know, second in the Atlantic this year. I really do.
So I'm going to take us out of the bucket full of nuts and bolts here for just a minute, maybe go off the tracks just a hair. Your mm-hmm. thoughts on this recently agreed to home-and-home with Cincinnati beginning in 2023. Is it a good thing, a bad thing, indifferent thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those deals where, I mean, for me, I'm indifferent to it. I'm probably in the minority on non-conference scheduling, and a lot of it's because of what I just talked about. You know, when you look at NC State's schedule right now, every year they're playing Clemson, and every year they're playing Florida State, who those two of us, you know, in the last 10 years have been, and I know Florida State's in a little rut now, but I expect it to get back, but those two have been the two best teams in the conference the last 10 years. And so when you're playing them every year, and you're getting compared locally in this area to teams like North Carolina, Duke, like I mentioned earlier, I don't think NC State should schedule hard out of conference. I really don't. I mean, my opinion is you play the bare minimum. And I'm going to preface this by saying I'm in the minority, I'm sure. But I just think you schedule around the Atlantic Division until the Coastal improves to where other teams are facing the similar type schedule that you are. And so Cincinnati to me is probably a team where you're filling that P5 requirement. I don't know. It's not really a huge recruiting area for NC State. I mean, they've taken a couple of kids out of that area, so that could play a role as well. They're generally fairly good. So, I mean, I think that's going to help. But for me, I mean, I look at it like I don't really put a lot of – if I'm NC State, I'm not going out there trying to schedule Alabama and Texas and Southern Cal and all these teams, or multiple of them every year. I don't think they should do that just based on their current schedule right now and the fact that every year they're playing the best team, I think right now, the best team in the country. And I think that when your rivals aren't, I think that should be something they take into consideration when building the schedule. I'd like to see them schedule Duke, you know, non-conference. I know North Carolina and Wake Forest are playing this week a non-conference game. And, I mean, NC State hasn't played Duke since 2013. I mean, that makes zero sense to me how you haven't played Duke in 6 years. And somehow we're in a conference that allows that to happen, to where you don't play a team that's 30 minutes down the road for 6 years. I don't understand how that's still happening. But if I'm NC State, I'm looking to schedule Duke, you know, as a non-conference game, just because I think you want to kind of try and play those local in-state teams as much as possible.
It's a great argument. It's something that I think a lot of is probably being raised by a lot of other people right now as well, because people are looking at this a lot of matchups similar to what you're talking about and saying, well, why haven't we? And that's a good question. Here's a question before we get into basketball. It's obviously a burning question in the minds of Wolfpack fans. How's Old Tuffy Beer going over?
You know, I hear it's doing well. I do. I haven't looked at the numbers, but I hear it's doing well. I'm not a beer guy, so I wouldn't be one to ask in terms of taste and all of that. But, you know, it seems like it's all the rage right now down here in Raleigh.
Okay. I'm going to have to pick some up at some point just to say that I have.
There you go.
All right, let's jump into some basketball here. Kevin just picked up a 2-year contract extension. That's a plus for sure for the team. Have you had time, to be frank about it, I have not had time to digest the recently released schedule. Have you taken a look at it, and you have any thoughts?
You know, I think it's interesting. I did think it, when I looked at it last night when it came out, I thought it was interesting that they were essentially opening the year with Georgia Tech. It's been, you know, in the release, I think it said it's been since the 60s the last time NC State opened the season with an ACC opponent. So that kind of caught me off guard. I didn't know teams were even looking to do that. But to think, you know, you're playing Georgia Tech on November 5th, that was my big takeaway from it, is you better be ready right away, because your ACC record is getting impacted right away. And NC State fans know, I mean, last year hosted Georgia Tech and lost that game essentially on a buzzer beater at home. So that's going to be a tough game right out the gate, I think, for NC State. But when you look at their non-conference schedule, I think it's a little better this year. You know, I do. I mean, I think you have obviously got Memphis on a neutral court game in Brooklyn. You've got Wisconsin in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. You got the return game against Auburn. You know, I think UNCG, Wes Miller over there, he's put together a really good program. I think that's a nice add to their non-conference schedule for NC State, getting them in, because I imagine they'll be really good. And then you mix in the rest of them. But you know, with the ACC schedule, I think NC State, I expect them to have a really good year this year based on the way they built that roster. I think this is going to be Kevin's best roster he's had at NC State when you mix in talent plus experience. So I think they're built for it. I think they're going to be one of the teams that compete in the ACC this year to win that conference. And I think the league is wide open. I think it's going to be so much fun to watch, because I can't look at it and find a team who I think is a no-brainer, they should win the league this year. I just really don't know if that team's out there. And so I think there's going to be five, six teams that can really compete for it this year.
Let's take a look at two players, and I'll leave it at that, because we could really get into the layers of experience and who's on the bench here. But Markell Johnson and DJ Funderburk. Now let's briefly talk about these two guys and how important they are to the success of the team.
Well, I think probably Markell Johnson returning for his senior year was maybe, off the top of my head, Kevin Keats' best recruiting job he's done since he's been at NC State. And, you know, it's weird saying that when you talk about a guy coming back for 1 year, but I think he has a chance to be one of the top players in the ACC this year. I really do. I mean, I think the light turned on for him last year, late in the season. If you look at his numbers down the stretch and into postseason play, I mean, he was a guy who was around 20 points per game, 5 assists per game, consistently. And if he can do that all year, you know, I think that takes NC State's program to another level. And that's why I think it was so big for NC State to get him to come back. You know, he had declared for the draft. He had some pro options, chose to return for his senior year. And I think getting him back takes them from being potentially a good team to maybe being a very good to great team, just because of having a senior point guard. I mean, it matters so much, I think, to have experience at that position, and Markell is going to be one of the best in the league. And then, obviously, DJ, you know, he's a guy who just keeps improving. I think he showed last year that he can be impactful in games. I think the big step for him now is to become more consistent each game. And you know, you can go to him and he's going to get you 14-7 or 15-8 every single night, whereas he doesn't have those situations where one game it's 18-8, the next game is 4-2. You know, he's got to become a consistent type player for you, but I think he's got a ceiling to where at 6'10", with his ability to stretch the floor, rebound, post up, I mean, I think he can be one of the better big men in the league. And so I think those two guys can form a nice 1-2 punch for NC State. And then they've just added a bunch of depth on the wing and at the guard position around them, to where, you know, I think those are going to be the two core pieces for State this year. But they return a ton of experience when you look at guys like Braxton Beverly, C.J. Bryce, and David Daniels, too.
Our thanks to James Henderson of Inside Pack Sports for stopping by, talking a little bit about golf, and we'll keep that on the down low. And football and basketball, getting a little bit of a taste of what's going on with the Wolfpack. Before we let you go, let folks know where and what they'll find with Inside Pack Sports.
Definitely. You know, I've had Inside Pack Sports running now for over 2 years, and you can find it real simple, www.insidepacksports.com. Our Twitter handle is @InsidePackSport. We cover all NC State athletics, football, basketball, baseball, women's basketball. We really cover it all. a great platform, subscription-based website. So make sure you check it out. I think it's, in my opinion, it's the best NC State site out there. I mean, obviously, I better think that, right? But but I truly believe that, and I think we're just going to continue to get better as we continue to grow. So make sure you visit Inside Pack Sports today.
And confidence breeds confidence, my man. Hey, thank you, sir. We appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, anytime.
All right, thanks again to our special guests, Jeremy Wallman, Karen Babel, and James Henderson. Subscribing to ACC Nation Podcast is easy, and best of all, it's free. Check out the subscription link at accnation.net, where you can follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, or Blueberry, and receive it via email. We'd appreciate a rating and review while you're there. ACC Nation Radio is streaming 365 24/7 at sites such as RadioGuide.fm, Radio Garden, and VTuner, among others. Simply check out the homepage at accnation.net. Thank you for listening. Be sure to let us know where you are so we can give you a shout-out. Drop us an email at contact@accnation.net. That's contact@accnation.net. Be sure to follow us on social media. Look for ACC Nation on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, and be sure to follow the guys on Twitter. Will is at Will's World, MN, Xavion at XAYVEON, and I'm at ACC The Q. Until next time, cheers.
Score.